All right, it is currently 4 o'clock p.m. on March 17, 2021. It is St. Patrick's Day. We are physically and electronically present in the program room of Carlin Ingersoll Library in Canton, Illinois. And I will call the meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Carlin Ingersoll Library to order for March. And the first item on the agenda is to review and approve the February 17th minutes, which of course were included in everybody's packet.
I can move. So
There is a motion from Kathy to approve those minutes. Is there a second?
I can second.
We've got a second. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion of those? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Okay, Jana.
Hi.
Kim.
Hi.
Chris. Hi. Kathy.
Hi.
Trig.
Hi.
And Keely.
Hi. Unanimously, the minutes will be approved. The next item on the agenda is to open the floor for public comments. Looking around the room, there are no members of the public present to give comments. Do we see anybody by Zoom?
I do not see anyone by Zoom.
Okay, well, in that case, we will declare the public comment period closed and move on to communications.
Okay, just a few things here. I included in your packet the results of the reference survey. We are required to do these once a year by the state library as they tabulate statistics. Nothing really new here. You know, questions are at about the level that they have always been, which is kind of interesting given the pandemic. It's not like there was a big drop. But you can see most of our questions do come in the mornings and the afternoons. Tuesday and Monday really are the busier days. I don't know if anybody had any questions on that, but I just wanted to share. Okay, hearing none. I also wanted to bring up the statements of economic interest. They're trying to simplify not sending out too many duplicates, so a lot of you might have gotten those individually. Just a reminder to go ahead and turn those in if you want. I have one trustees here, but you can just mail those directly to the Fulton County Clerk if you would like as well. There should have been instructions in with your form. Non-resident letters did go out March 1st. We have had some comments. I've taken names and concerns. So far, everybody has been pleasant. The questions were, some were wondering if there was a senior citizen discount on the tax, which there is not. I had a couple ask about the disabled veteran reduction, but the law is only if they are 70% disabled, which means they pay no real estate tax. And I did not realize, but apparently I had two people call that they get a 30% discount on their taxes as a disabled veteran, but they do still need to pay our fee. I had a couple that were not understanding that this is a separate tax. They just thought they lived outside the area and paid to Canton School District, so that was the same as being taxed for us. And other than that, so far it hasn't been too bad. We probably had four or five people already pay their fee and you know, are willing to go forward. So I just wanted to share that. I don't know if any of the trustees have had any comments. No? Okay. And then I just wanted to bring up, I did get a renewal contract for AT&T. Our line charge did go up some. And I did ask if landlines were going to be at end of life. And she said she received a list of end of life items for 2025. This was not on there yet. She said it didn't mean things couldn't change. But I think I budgeted as if it would have gone up. I just think it's one of those things. This links in with our fire alarm monitoring system, which will probably need a new panel and probably go cellular. And with our phone system, we purchase phones that should be able to be compatible. I talked to a salesperson with Mid-Century. He thought our current phones, that they could utilize those. So I think it's something that probably not in this upcoming year, but maybe the year after, we ought to look at seriously and budget for a capital expense, because that might include changing the network and everything else at this point. I know some vendors prefer to use their own phone and lease them. We did purchase these phones, so the fact that Mid-Century said they thought they could use them would be a plus. They also didn't think we'd need to increase our network. But some communities are still comfortable keeping a landline for safety reasons, for the fire alarm monitoring and whatnot. So I think it's something to look at. I think its day will be coming, but with this short notice, I don't think it's something to tackle right now, but I wanted to let people know. And that was all I had on communications.
All right, thank you very much. We will go ahead in that case and move into our regular agenda, beginning with the consent agenda for February 2021. That was included in the packet. Does anybody have any discussion of the consent agenda, or is there a motion to approve?
Need a motion? I'm sorry.
Yeah, please. If
mine keeps cutting in and out, so I don't know if I'm just missing something, but I'll make that motion.
Okay, thank you. So we do have a motion from Jana to approve the consent agenda for February
21. I'll second that motion.
You got a second. Thank you very much.
Can you all hear me?
Yes, we might.
I can hear you.
Okay, my microphone has been acting up, so I was just making sure.
Okay, good. We heard that, I think.
Can you hear us, Laura?
Yeah, sorry, I was a little late.
That's okay.
All right. That's all right.
We are at the consent agenda, and we just had a motion and a second to approve it. So I can include you in the vote if we want to.
Yeah. So I was just going to ask if there was any further discussion before we take a roll call vote. So hearing none.
Okay, Keely Bulmer. Trey Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ledlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Laura Kessel.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Okay, so the consent agenda will pass. The next item to discuss is the quote for the east side ramp and the sidewalk repair. I will say up front, I was reading my board packet today. Labrador Construction is a client, so I am going to abstain from voting on this, just to avoid any conflict of interest. However, do you want to introduce the topic of discussion?
Sure. As you recall, when we were looking at this last fall, we were looking at using some of the donation money that we received to put a ramp out the east side door and correct some of the sidewalk offset there. Because we went ahead and we had Autobahn patched part of those offsets that were at the entrance, for ADA reasons, we need to follow through and make a full correction on putting that accessible ramp there and making it ADA accessible. So Doug Bensinger was the person I was working with as the main contact with this from Phillips and Associates. They drew together all the drawings. The sump pump work that was involved with the storm drain has already been completed. So they put the rest of this out for bid. They contacted 6 or 7 companies. I went to the bid opening, and at any rate, they only had one bid. It was from Lavergier in Macomb. They originally thought that the bid might be about $45,000, but this one bid came in at $63,300. They did say that a lot of the issue also involved the fact that there's the storm drain, and then the offsets on the sidewalk, and putting a trench in. So there was a little more work than they anticipated. The contractors also felt that they needed to replace the public sidewalk because of the work that would be done there. Doug Bensinger asked Keith at Maurer Stutz, the city engineer, about that because they did have to get permission or right-of-way for the storm drain there if they would cover any of that cost. And he said that most of that work is done for residential. He asked the mayor, and the mayor said no. That's what the library was taxing for these projects. So the bid is $63,300. I would anticipate that we would have architectural fees and that, yes, they are going to test the concrete. So that the total job might be about $70,000, which in the current budget, I had put $75,000 for capital expense, but I was not counting on it being this project. But at any rate, I told Bill that I would get back to him, but their letter does recommend we accept this bid. Lavardere is a responsible bidder and company. They do good work.
Well, I obviously agree with that. I won't vote. So does anybody, I think maybe there are sort of like two things that we might want to think about. One is, I know you mentioned in the action item memo that we had talked about using the rest of Mrs. Smith's donation to offset the cost. And I think maybe initially we had hoped that it might totally offset the cost, and that obviously did not pan out like we hoped it would. So I guess we might want to talk about whether we want to go ahead and just accept that that'll be a partial offset and it will require additional funding from just the general budget, and then whether to accept the bid at that price. So I guess what I would ask is, does anybody have any hesitancy or any concern with using the rest of Mrs. Smith's donation to offset the cost of that?
Yeah, I would just say the donation was $50,000. We spent $4,000 reupholstering furniture. So there was $46,000 left there, but this job will bill in the next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we did not earmark that money for anything else.
I don't have any hesitation advocating that. My question would be, why does Phillips and Associates, did they comment why they think that they only received one bid packet back?
Yeah, the comments were just, it just depends on how jobs are going this year and what is going on. There were the other company that came and viewed the site, he said was from a totally different area. He didn't think that there was anything, you know, it was all above board. There wasn't any as far as people talking about what they were bidding prior. But other than that, it's just, you know, kind of the nature of, they thought they would get more bids too. They specifically reached out to six or seven companies, and depending on how their projects are going and how busy they are, you know, that was the best answer I got on that, Chris.
So I'm guessing based on their recommendation that they pretty much exhausted the list of viable companies, and that the chance of putting this back out and getting a lower number is probably slim.
They did not bring up if that would be an option. Hold on just a moment and I can tell you the companies they reached out to. Oops. Oh dear, I thought I had it, but there were six or seven there because I was at the bid opening. Gosh, I've got so many piles, I don't have it right here in front of me. But there were several companies. I know Operel or was one of them. Autobahn was on the list. There were several. They did not say they could put it back out for bid again. I think they feel that this is it. So
I would imagine that if we didn't want to do that, we probably have to delay the project by a pretty I mean, I think we'd have to wait until, you know, like later on this season or next fall.
It was Opperly, CAD Construction, Hein Construction, Labrador, Leander, and Audubon were the group.
So I'm comfortable with it if they're confident that would be a similar or comparable price of those other contractors if they were to bid. I know that you had mentioned that there were some things that they perhaps weren't considering when quoting us that original number. But the thing that I don't want to run into is they really didn't want the job and they bid it high and nobody else bid, so we're stuck with them. You know, I just don't want us to be in that situation, which it doesn't sound like we are.
Any further discussion? Okay. Does anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make that motion.
I thought I heard maybe Kathy second that.
Sure.
And I'll second
that. This is Kim.
Okay, so it's Kathy's motion and Kim's second. And is this to accept the bid?
Well, is it both? Is it to accept the bid and to earmark the rest of the Smith donation money just to do it all in one? I think that's okay.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, let's take a roll call vote.
Jana Emmons?
Aye.
Kim Fraley?
Aye.
Laura Kessel?
I heard something.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said aye. I'm having trouble.
Yeah, I saw the mic go out. Chris Layton?
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam?
Aye.
Trig Mead is an abstention.
Abstain.
And Kaylee Vollmer?
Aye.
Okay.
Okay. The next item to discuss is a potential transfer of money from the reserve to the checking account.
I can just, say monies in the account are getting very low. And I just think, with these things coming up, that it is something that we should transfer. I put down $100,000, just given what this ramp bid is. Basically, the remainder of the Smith donation, it's already been expended. But we just have several other items coming due that I think that would give us a cushion. As I mentioned, we transfer $52,000 every month. Our expenditures are averaging $56,000. And I think this will get us through. I would anticipate we might start getting some tax monies in June. I don't know what percent of the whole we would receive. But our policy is that we have to have two of three signatures authorize a transfer. When I wrote the memo, we were about 30 some thousand in checking. We did get our 52,000 disbursement, so right now we're at about 75. But we do have big expenditures with some annual software renewals that are coming up. I'm still waiting for the remainder of the networking work to be done from our upgrade in July. There's one more piece that needs to be done, and that work has not yet been done. So there are some annual items that will be coming up beyond the normal monthly expenditures that I just thought that would give us a good cushion. And then we do have investments due in, coming back due in May and August. So we could discuss at that time if we still need those funds or if Sue Fraley, our investment officer, can reinvest.
Anybody have any questions or concerns or suggestions?
Two of three signatures, which would be Trig, Jana, and myself. So we're good on that.
Okay. Does anybody have a motion to make a transfer of $100,000 from reserves to general?
Motion.
We have Chris's motion.
I'll second.
Jana's second. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Keely Vollmer. Trig Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Laura Kessel. I think that was an aye. Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Enos.
Aye.
Well, since that motion has passed unanimously, I will sign the letter now. So there we go. Okay, the next item on the agenda is to take a look at our proposed budget for next year, which is also included in the packet. So it looks from the memo like there will be some changes from last month based on what the city was doing with insurance.
Yes, and the city did not approve the self-insured policy yet at the meeting last night. They wanted to give it a little more time. So they're having another meeting on Monday, March 22nd, with some room for public comment. And then they said they would vote on the policy. It basically is going to a partially self-insured fund at no increase from what the Blue Cross payments were. Tim Wyman, the consultant, says that all coverage is the same. Same hospitals, same doctors, same deductibles, everything. They did approve the dental policy going up 8%. So that one did go through council. But this one, they wanted a little more time. I did not know that it was going to be a delay. So the most recent budget information that you have in your packet is based on the medical insurance being flat. So I'm not sure. I personally too, I'm not sure what information the city will want from us as far as when they start having their budget meetings. But they mentioned, well, no one has invited me. They mentioned they were having some budget meetings next week.
I'm not sure that they need us though.
I'm not sure if they will pull from our information and then put it in a format for, because it would be the FY22 budget, which is what you would need to approve before they pull.
Yeah, but I think, and I'm not their controller, nor their attorney, nor their, I'm not Becca, in any sense. But I would think that if I were advising them, what I would tell them to do is just have a line in their budget that says transfer to library funds. And just a show an input of whatever they expect the tax revenues are going to be, and a one-to-one transfer to the library funds for that amount of money, and just leave it at that. I'm not sure if that's what they will do, but I think that they could.
Would they pull the figures off whatever budget you approve now for FY22?
I don't think so. I think what they would just do is they would just say, in our City of Canton fiscal year 2022 budget, we have X amount of dollars coming in, some of which is due to the library's taxation. And we'll have one line that says pass through the library, and then $200,000 or $296,000-ish, mm-hmm, or whatever it turns out to be. And leave it at that. And I think that they could.
And that's the amount then that we'll approve that's in the next item on the budget for the levy.
I guess for fiscal year 22, it would probably be what they approved last year, I would think. Because that's what they'll receive in 22 and then pay out in 22, right? They'll get...
On that, I was not sure. Okay. I know... what they levied, we gave the figures from our FY21 budget.
Right.
Which we won't be on when we receive.
Right. Because that's how we determine our levy.
Right.
But I think, and I mean, I might be wrong about this. So the fiscal year rolls over to the next one in
May 1.
May 1. And so they'll probably get their first set of revenues in June. And their second set in September. And so all of that would be in fiscal year 2022.
Right.
So I would think that they could just elect to just say, okay, this is a lump sum transfer, mm-hmm, with no further detail. And then if somebody wanted to look at our budget, then.
Well, they did request our FY21 budget. Becca, the comptroller, did last fall. And they pulled some of the figures that they put in the levy in December from that. And you had said that you wanted your next request for levy amounts to be done in March, and I did include that in your packet.
Yeah, so that they can, because they'll approve that in December.
Right.
So they'll have to know.
Right. I just didn't know if they need to see our FY22 figures, which are not very different other than, and maybe we need to go to that item. Next, before our budget? I don't know.
Well, I don't think we have to. I don't think if they don't end up asking us for further information, that would not be concerning to me. Because I think what I would do is I would just assume that they're just going to say, okay, we're going to take this money in and just which is what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to take it in and segregate it in its own fund and then transfer it to us. And they would not necessarily look on a city level. I don't think that for their obligations in the municipal code that they would have to do anything more than that. Because they're saying that we're taking it in and this is where it's going.
So shall I wait if they contact me or not?
Well, I think in the name of transparency and open access to information that if they ask us for something, absolutely. But I wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't press it. I mean, I think that we've sort of already, I mean, they're taxing for us, so they can't keep it.
Last spring they said they weren't taxing yet, so they didn't want information from us.
Yep.
At this time.
Because they wouldn't have had anything to give us. Right. Right. So that way, yeah. I mean, maybe I'm whistling past the graveyard. I think that's possible. But I don't think that they have to. I don't think that they have to ask us for anything if they don't want to. I don't think that they do for the pension funds, which is the one that we've sort of been, or the police pension board, which is, I think, the one that we've sort of been analogizing to the whole time, is because they do something similar to us, where they just tell the city, this is what we want you to tax for us, but it's really our money.
Mm-hmm.
And they take it in and put it in the police pension board fund, and as they get it, and then they just transfer it out to whatever account the pension board is set up to receive it, and they don't put anything more. They don't put any more information.
Well, in the FY22 budget, I listed estimated tax income, and I listed the amount that they taxed on our behalf in December.
Yeah,
even though there's always that delay there.
Right, because people will pay their bills in June and then it takes a while to collect it, and they pay them again in September and it takes a while to collect it.
But and they're basing the levy on
last year's.
Right. So there's the delay. Right.
So, but I think that's appropriate. Because we probably won't get that money this year or this, well.
Whatever's paid.
Next fiscal year, we'll get it. Like we'll get it in the way that it's shown on the budget. So I think that's right. Do you mind if I ask you a different question?
Sure.
I have very little knowledge about the self-funding insurance plan. So how does that work, and is it too good to be true? Because it certainly sounds like we're getting like the same coverage at the same price, or they're proposing that we would.
Right. The consultant said what we would be seeing is you have different third-party administrators that are covering some of those costs. And the reinsurer, which would be the company that covers high claims over $75,000,
okay,
is, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but it's only a certain percentage of the whole cost. I'll say 16%.
Okay.
That 16% is where we could see larger increases. But then what happens is 70-some percent of the monies that they pay on our behalf, I'll say premium, but that will go into a fund that the city will have a third party administer, and it will pay everyone's claims that are under $75,000.
Okay.
And then the thought is, if you go to this partially self-insured, it's different than what the previous ones were, partially self-insured, it should help balance out claims so you don't get a 35% increase 1 year and a, okay, you know, a 5% another year. And that helps. And then they use the phrase, it helps eliminate razors. And I think they mean those big spikes that you get when you do have a large claim for someone, a big right, heart surgery or whatever. So Tim Wyman said that, you know, all coverage would be the same. And he thinks in the long run that this would save money and we wouldn't have, the plan would be looking at other ways that we could economize and save money instead of just a flat, it's X amount increase.
So mechanically, so like if I were a library employee and I had health insurance, I then just submit a claim to the third party administrator that the city hires to manage the funds.
I believe that's how the detail works. Okay. On that, I'm not sure the public comment would be Monday at 8 o'clock. They gave us contracts that showed, you know, Unity Point and OSF, and on both contracts, Grant is listed. So Grant is a provider, just like any of the others. I think there, you know, that was a question last night, but they were on the documents and they reinforced that Graham is a preferred provider and that you would be getting the discounts. I asked if there would still be the same types of copay. Yes, the same. All that, I am told everything would be the same, except in the long term, they see this saving, you know, $900,000. Given what the other increases could be.
Well, that's...
It's a three-year contract, and they say if, and that's to lock in the rates, but if the city would decide it's not working and they want to cancel that contract next year, they can.
Okay, so if it turns out, so our contribution right now as the library, we pay a portion of the premiums that the city pays to whatever, I think it's Blue Cross Blue Shield,
right? The way it pays right now is we are actually billed separately, and I'm told we will still be billed separately. Currently, we get a bill from Blue Cross directly. We get a bill from Guardian, which covers dental, vision, and life insurance. On the medical side, our library policy is we pay 80% of the individual employee. The employee pays 20%. On anyone electing to take coverage beyond single, the library will pay the difference and only cover 15%, and the employee would cover the other 85%. On the dental, it is the same percentages, 80-20, and then if it's a coverage beyond employee, it's the 15-85. Vision is an option, but it is 100% paid by the employee. And life insurance is paid by the level.
So we're not going to have a situation, or maybe we will, and I guess I should phrase that a little less definitively. So if we had an employee who had, for example, like a claim of $72,000 in 1 year, so it's high, but it's not as high. It's not high enough to trigger the reinsurance. Beyond the $75,000 claim, are we still in the same risk pool as the city? So,
I did not hear differently on that.
Okay. I mean, because it just seems like we have I'm not sure how many employees in the library take our health insurance.
Six.
I mean, so if we did have one employee who had like a rough year, but not so rough, it's the reinsurance, then we have such a small pool, mm-hmm, if we're not, you know, in with the city too, but that seems like we would really, mm-hmm, maybe, trigger a big increase just for us. I'm not sure if...
That didn't come up. I'm assuming we're considered in the same group as with the city employees.
Okay.
Not been an issue before.
Okay.
So I've got a question to piggyback off of Trigg's question. Was the city previously fully insured and now they're transitioning to a partially self-funded option?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, and it's one of those things. I mean, I have very little knowledge and expertise. I mean, particularly about health insurance. I know a little bit more about liability insurance because of my job, not as much as Kathy does, obviously. But this just seems like one of those things where it just seems like it almost too good to be true, you know, where it seems like we, you know, oh, it's the same, like we're not having any increase whatsoever. And, it, you know, when everything else is so rough and...
The consultant said with fully insured plans, he said usually within every 5 years, they get a really big spike. And he said right now, our claims were lower with COVID. He thinks we're getting a really good deal at this point in time that he didn't think we would be able to get that deal. He's been recommending we take a look at self-insured for quite a while. And I don't mean to say I'm one way or the other. I'm just trying to pass on the information that I was given. But
does he identify any potential downside?
Not at this point, no.
I know some downside based on conversations with our insurance broker, and that would be if next year there is a catastrophic event, such as an organ transplant or something that is millions and millions of dollars, that is generally the thing that kind of derails the benefits of this option.
Right. And his comment on that was that would only be the 16% of the whole cost that would have the big increase. So even if the reinsurance that covered claims over 75,000 took a big, you know, increase, that overall that big increase would still only be 16% of the total cost.
Maybe not after that increase though.
Yeah, he said that the reinsurance would go up, you know, based on that each year. Right now he was recommending we keep all premiums cost the same, even though the quote that he got was really a little less than that.
Okay.
So he said he would recommend just having the employee portions, and different unions within the city have different percentages of what they pay. Our agreement was the library could determine that. The park district as well determines their, I think they're like 95.5. You know, it's part of an intergovernmental agreement of us determining our own internal rates on what we pass on to the employee.
Well, they have that airport money, so. I guess we're kind of locked in though, right? I mean, like whatever they decide to do,
yes.
I mean, we're not really.
Whatever council decides, even the insurance committee's advice is just advisory. What the council decides is what goes.
So I guess there probably isn't a lot of point in fretting over it because we'll just sort of take what they give us.
Otherwise, it would be trying to find a group that would cover insurance for us separately, which would be
difficult and almost certainly not economical. So, well, there you go. It'll be what it is.
But in the budget that's presented, I took it as it would be a flat rate other than the 8% on dental.
Well.
So those figures are in. I don't know if there are other questions or concerns with the budget. I don't know if the city doesn't need figures from us right away, if people still want to explore it more. Again, I had budgeted $75,000 for capital, so already, you know, some of that money's going to be, the majority is going to go to the ramp. Hopefully we can get the lighting and put the other capital projects on the back burner at this point. And we might not get that full amount of the tax monies either, depending on what might not be paid or delinquent or whatnot. So and the question again, the Ingersoll Trust monies, I originally thought it might be around $610,000. We have that lower so that we can start building up those reserves in anticipation of the the upcoming roof work. So that's the drop there. But if anybody else has other questions, I know I've talked to Chris and Rhonda. But if there's any, or Chris, if you have anything, you know, revisiting that or any other comments, if people would like changes. And there's always the possibility of calling a special meeting as well. But right now,
based on the answers to my questions, Kim, I'm comfortable with this budget.
Anybody else? Well, if everyone feels like we've had enough, I mean, we've had it for a couple months. If everyone feels like we've had it for enough time, I think we're probably ready to vote. Does anybody have any additional questions, or do we want more time to read it over and dig in a little bit deeper? Okay, well, hearing none, is there anybody that would like to make a motion to approve it?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you. I will second it. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Okay. Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Laura Kessel. Aye. Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kathy Ledlam.
Aye.
Trig Mead.
Aye.
And Keely Ballmer.
So another one in the bag. So let's move on to the levy request for next year.
Okay, what I did, and I explained this in your action item memo, but I took the estimated equalized assessed valuation rate that the city used when they determined the December levy. And at Trigg's recommendation, I added 5% just to allow for if any, there are any changes there, and put that figure in. We kept tort the same. Social Security went up just a tiny little bit. IMRF went down because we had some employee changes, and I had two people on IMRF that left, and I hired in three people not on IMRF. So from what we requested last time, IMRF is down a little bit. And the audit is the same, and that was partially me having a wrong figure. So based on what year the audit is and what fiscal year the billing comes. But at any rate, when I put those together, we came up with a total request of $296,080. And then I do have a draft. I should have printed one without the word draft. Sure. If you have a minute,
I'll
print one. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, this is then the letter that goes to Mayor McDowell with Trigg's signature on it, requesting the amounts of money that we want them to levy, which would happen in December.
So it looks right to me, if you want the legal opinion on it. And I guess what I would say is, I mean, like as she points out, we don't know that we're gonna get all this money. We just know that if we were to ask for less than 0.15% of the EAV, then we'll only get what we ask for. So we won't capture any increase at all. 5% is the most that we can do without triggering a truth in taxation hearing. So we, as a convention, when I prepare these for townships and little taxing districts and things like that, it is our convention usually to ask for a 5% increase, knowing that we'll just get whatever and actually did increase. And if it turns out that they discover gold under Canton Lake or something, and the equalized assessed value increases more than 5%, that's our bad luck, I guess. So So that's why we do it like that. Does anybody have any questions or concerns?
I wonder, Trigg, last time when we met with them in October, then they kept saying they had another estimated and lowered that rate setting EAV. Is it something where we might have to do a revision again in the fall if they come up with a different EAV that they want to use?
I don't think so, but okay. If they ask us to, mm-hmm. I would probably do it to avoid making waves.
Okay.
If they, rather than fight about it, I'd probably just do it. Because I think we got the correct amount of money. Mm-hmm. They were correct. If we ask for more than we can get, then it just gets lowered by the county clerk to the maximum amount that we can get. So it won't make a tremendous difference one way or the other. There are so many built-in limits to us being able to sort of do whatever we want that it's, there's a lot of fail-safes. So does anybody have a motion to approve the letter? If so, and it's approved, I'll just sign it when we're finished. And we have a motion. Healy, is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Kathy. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, let's take a roll call vote. Whoops.
That's okay. Keely Vollmer.
Aye. Trigg Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Laura Kessel.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Right. Okay.
I will stick around.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. So we will move on to the succession plan policy.
Yes.
Which was also included in the packet.
Right. This is something that was recommended in the Serving Our Public Standards. I've been working on succession planning for 3 years now. They recommended this policy. It's almost a template of what other libraries have done. I think what we are doing is we're also basically doing more of a procedure manual of what each person in key positions does. Yearly, every month, certain responsibilities. So we have manuals for the director's position, for the circulation manager, for the accounts manager, for our networking. Our youth services librarian has guidelines of what programs are done, what time of the year. This policy basically spells out specific things related to if it would be a short-term absence or a long-term absence of the director. Who might step up in that place if that was the case, what procedures you might do if it was something long-term, or if you would have an interim director, etc. It's pretty boilerplate. At the end, it also has specific information related to who your auditor is, where you bank, who is your attorney, how many people sign a check, etc. So that's kind of spelled out in here, insurance agent, payroll, etc. I think that the biggest thing here is at this time, who would be acting director if something would happen to me? And at this time, Brenda Hatzel, our circulation manager, would be the first position. She's been here over 35 years and knows what we do and is very responsible and an excellent employee. And the backup is the public services assistant, and that currently is Ben Smith. Both of those two are my backup people on things with the building. While we all have information in our disaster response plan, which I'll be opening or updating, but they are the ones that we all go down in the basement. We point to certain features on the HVAC equipment, et cetera, to know what to do. And they are also the backup callers for emergency with the police department and the fire. So I think that's the key thing with this plan is that you would want to update as you have personnel changes. And I'm still working on everybody finishing up their daily and annual duties. Legally, everybody that says they have one of these and shares it, it's the same template. So I don't know if anything jumps out at you, Trigg, as an attorney, that you would feel maybe should be worded differently, but this seems to be the one that everybody is using and then inputting their own individual differences.
Well, who am I to argue with consensus? the only thing, I mean, and this is really more of like a sort of like a nitpick rather than, you know, something that I think is like a glaring error. It's just where it says that if we were to appoint a search committee and try to hire an internal library director, that they have to have experience as the head of a district.
Okay.
What so feature? That would be
Here on page like two.
Two, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a municipal library, as opposed to like a district. I'm not sure if those terms are used interchangeably, but
legally, no. Should we leave off the word district?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, just because
just
I
don't have significant experience as the director of an Illinois library.
Library, yeah. I mean, because I wouldn't want to exclude people that might actually have more relevant experience to what we do.
Okay.
Because we're not a district. We're a, well, we're our own thing. So we'll have to explain it to whoever is anyway. But we are sort of a municipal library. So I would imagine that the search committee would probably be just the whole board. Really.
Could be what you really don't have any committees at this point. You function as so, a committee of the whole.
Pretty much.
Although you could always change that if something would come up.
Yeah.
And that's under the long-term absence.
Which,
so
odds are we'll never need it. So.
Yeah, it's page two. And then this would need signatures by the president, the board secretary, and the director.
Oh.
If it's approved.
Okay. Well, otherwise it all looks in order to me. Does anybody else have any questions, concerns, suggested changes?
I like the policy. It's something you hope you never have to use, but it's nice to have in place in case something happens. So.
Absolutely. And I guess it's nice to be working on those standards too, since we, we say we are.
It would fit on the standards. I think the key for any of those positions that somebody walks in is the procedure manual. I've been pushing for that for quite a while, but I think that is helpful and that will help anybody when they step into any of those positions. So.
Okay. Well, hearing no further questions, concerns, or suggested changes, does anybody have a motion to approve it with a tiny
change? That's a correction, yeah.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Jana first.
Okay. Jana first and Chris second?
Yes.
And don't forget that, Chris. I'm first and you are second.
So we'll be checking.
I already knew that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Okay. Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Trigg Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Laura Kessel.
Aye.
Okay. Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Sneeze or something.
Yeah, it's just a.
Okay.
If you would, Keely, we'll have you sign this page and then I'll put the corrected pages together with it.
Great.
But then we can have you and Trigg sign and save you a trip here next time.
Great.
Okay.
COVID-19 mitigation in the library.
Yes, I just always put this in case something comes up, but just to give everyone an update. At this point in time, the health department is still determining that library employees fall under the category 1C. We have a total of 12 employees. At this point in time, we only have 3 that have not at least had one shot because the other employees have fallen into vulnerable categories or were able to get a vaccine because of age or because of other employment. So right now, all employees are getting there, and then 3 of us We'll have to wait till it is 1C, and then apparently then I go to the health department website and then we sign up to get on the list. Other than that, so far really nothing has changed. I hear people thinking that there will be another announcement later in the week by the governor on this, but at this point in time, that's all that I have with COVID.
I had not heard that. What are we expecting?
I don't know. I don't know if it's loosening up numbers or gatherings.
Full category. It's like a half, four and a half. I think they're thinking it's coming.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, that's potentially good news. Okay. Well, moving on to the last item on the agenda for today. I owe you an email about setting up a meeting with our potential trustee candidate that we talked about the last couple times.
Okay, I'm not sure who that is, but that's fine.
And I've been trying to, I feel awful because I've spoken to her twice, and it's just been that kind of a day. I do not, she's a physical therapist.
Okay.
I just don't remember what her name is off on my head.
So, okay.
Lacey?
Yes. Okay. Yes, thank you. Yes, it's Lacey. Thank you, Laura. Yeah, it has been that sort of day. So. But I think that's the end of the agenda.
Okay.
Will we then approve
that at the April meeting, and then I'll give the returning candidates and the incumbent name to the mayor at the April meeting? Does that sound fine?
Yes. And okay. Let's hope that it goes as smoothly as it usually does.
Okay.
Now that we've made the math. Okay, well, that concludes the agenda for this month. I'm happy to say that it is like 4:57. That's the first time in a little while that we've done that. So, is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
That was Laura. Thank you. I will second it. And let's take a roll call vote.
Okay, Jana Enans. Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Laura Kessel?
Aye.
Chris Layton?
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam?
Aye.
Trig Mead?
Aye.
And Keely Vollmer?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.